George. I've never been called a renowned speaker, but I have been called Jody's husband. So, in fact, that's my identity here. Is that a little bit too loud? Okay. I am Jody's husband. I kind of get used to it because, you know, when you're married to someone who's so great like my wife, you don't mind being second fiddle. Because sometimes second fiddle is better than most people's first fiddle, if that makes any sense. And I'll take it. I'll take it. So, excuse me, is my PowerPoint on this here? This one. Okay, great. Which one do I press here? This one here? Okay, got it. Okay. You should always check your electricity, your electronics, your media before. But I thank you, George, for that renowned speaker. I'll tell Jody that. But next time I come, you just call me Jody's husband, because that's just really what I'm known for. Right? How many of you know my wife, Jody Chung? She's a teen camper. Those of you who've gone to camp, you know my wife through camp. What was your name again? Sherry? Oh, are you Sherry Lai? Oh, okay, you're Lucy's sister, aren't you? Wow, you've grown. Are you an older sister or a younger sister? You're older. You're younger, right? Yeah, that's what I thought. Your mom and dad aren't here, are they? Because I'll be getting Jack and you. Okay, good. Jack, okay, that's good. Why? What grade are you in now? Oh, ninth grade. Okay, that's why. Okay, it's been a while. So, it's been a while. So, yeah, your sister's a lot older than you. At least 6 years older, right? 5 years older? Okay. Okay, good. Okay, most of you know Jody through camps, so I don't mind, you know, being known as Jody's husband. I just sort of accept it. But don't call me Matt's friend. I mean, Matt and I are good friends, but then Matt and I actually did go to the same school. We were actually classmates. And so it's kind of fun how we've been reunited. And I still remember, you know, the church we used to serve, we're just kind of whispering back and forth about remember those days. And I kind of remember those days when we all left and Matt was behind by himself. And I felt how that church kind of beat him up a little bit, unfairly. And yet Matt never once complained, just continued serving faithfully. And so I had no problems when Matt came here because, you know, no one's perfect, but Matt's heart is pure. And that's all you really look for in a minister is the purity of heart. Because a lot of guys I've come to realize are very smooth, if it makes sense. They come out and they appear so powerful and dynamic, and not to say that Matt's not powerful and dynamic, but they can hide what's inside. And what I've seen is Matt doesn't hide what's inside. And that's really all you can ask, because you know, the more and more you're doing the ministry, the more and more you see that there's a lot of people who are serving God that shouldn't be. They've kind of learned how to fake it. And Pastor David Chu is another man who's great, pure of heart. In fact, I always tell, you know, Pastor David Chu, I always tell him the only thing I require when I come to preach, and that's why he hasn't asked me to preach for a while, is that I don't care about anything except for Fung Mei's tofu pea. Have you guys ever had his wife's tofu pea? It's the best, by far. And so whenever they ask me to come preach, the first thing I always say is, I only come if Fung Mei makes me tofu pee. If she doesn't make me tofu pee, then I'm not coming. See, it's too long of a drive. I need to have the tofu pee. So anyway, but I know as soon as I get to church, Jody is going to be mad at me for making Fung Mei make me tofu pee. And then my mother-in-law is going to be upset that I made Fung Mei make me tofu pee. But you know what? As soon as I take one bite, I won't care. And then I won't share either, because they yelled at me. So it's great. I want them to yell at me so I don't have to share. And then she said, oh, you know, Fung Mei was really apologetic. She said, I'm sorry I didn't make more for your family. I said, oh, it's a good thing you didn't, because I would just take it myself anyway. So I should say, oh, you should make some for Pastor David Shure. And that'd be a total lie, because I would totally smuggle it for myself. Oh, I forgot, you know, old. Anyway, all right. I can understand what motivates me. Some people are motivated by money, power. I'm motivated by tofu pee. So, all right. Now, I've been serving God. I mean, when we graduated seminary probably, what, 20 years ago? I graduated about 20 years ago. What about you? About 18, right? You graduated in 2000, didn't you? Okay. So about 17 years for Matt, about 20 years for me. I ask this question quite a bit. What do people want? Is there a laser on here? Oh, whoops. Nope, there's not. Okay. Is there a laser on this? Right here? Is that it? That's not it. Is this it? Ah, there it is. Good. All right, so if people fall asleep, I'll just shoot you in the eye, in your eyes. Okay, now, if I were to ask you, what do you want, what would you say? Okay? If I ask some of the young people, what do you want, most of you say, good grades, right? Okay, how many of you guys who don't have a girlfriend say, I would like the most beautiful girlfriend I could find? Be honest. Okay. Great. Nothing wrong with that. God made us, I mean, Song of Songs is there. Okay, it's there. Let's just accept it. We're made for romantic love. That's part of it. I know it's a Chinese church predominantly, but the Bible, you know, it's pretty obvious. Not just Song of Songs, romantic love is there. Right, Mike, you better start holding Nancy's hand right now, but that's cute. There you go. All right, smart man. That's why he's got a PhD. Permanent head damage, right? I got one too. All right, romantic love is one thing people want. How many of you would choose riches? How many of you would choose riches? Okay. Nothing wrong with that either, okay? Actually, the Bible doesn't say it's a sin to be rich. It's a sin to love money. All right, there's a lot of rich people in the Bible. You think King David was a pauper? All right. Solomon had great wealth. And Job, if you look at it, when Job was blessed, one thing that he was blessed with was wealth. All right? Romantic love, money. How about prestige? Any of you guys would like prestige, like a position? I mean, I just, actually, what Elder George read was from my bio from my recent book, not my old book. That's from my recent book. And I'm not going to lie, I check the Amazon to see where my book stands on the bestseller list. And when it moves up, I get excited because I know someone's bought my book. And basically, every few hours that no one buys the book, it just goes down, 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 down. So, I mean, I've been in a millionth place, and then all of a sudden I look and it's, oh, it's 100,000. That means I know one person, at least one person bought the book, you know. Anyway, so I know that if I had a choice, I would love my book to be on the New York Times bestseller list, okay? God says, Mike, do you want it? I said, sure. Won't even think about it, all right? But we all want different things to feel satisfied. And as I've studied, as I've really worked with people in the ministry, I've kind of seen that this is really what drives people's behavior, what drives their decision-making, what drives their choices, whether it's good choices, but most of them are bad choices, actually. When you become a parent, you begin to realize that if you don't supervise your children, eventually they're going to do something that you're going to regret, right? And I've come to see that serving God is actually very similar, if not the exact same thing, as parenting. If you don't supervise your sheep, I'm talking to those in Christian leadership, I'm talking to those of you in the leadership, Bible study leaders, pastors, elders, deacons. If you're not supervising your sheep, eventually they will stray. Because human nature is wired for what we want. Okay, my son is wired for satisfaction. He wants food, he wants attention. That's really what he wants. If I can give him enough food and enough attention, he should be okay. Human beings, as you get older, it becomes more complicated. But the basic drive is the same. Your choices are basically driven by either dopamine or cortisol. Does that make sense? Okay, this is where I wish your dad was here, Sherry, because your mom and dad are both medicine. Okay, dopamine, they're neurochemicals. Dopamine is what you get when you see a Big Mac, for me, okay? And I take a bite, or a Coke. I like Cokes and things. Not a good thing. In fact, if I have time, I'm going to try to buy a couple bottles of Cokes just to drink. But why do I drink Coke? It's one of the worst things I can do for my body. When I sip it, my brain shoots off what's called dopamine. It makes me feel good. And in the end, a lot of us are driven by we want to feel good about ourselves. We just want to feel good. Cortisol is the neurotransmitter is the chemical that your body shoots off when it's under stress. That's what you don't want. You don't want cortisol, all right? That's why if you're under stress for too long, your body starts to have negative reactions because your body is releasing this hormone that's not healthy. It makes you feel bad, and it makes your body have poor health, okay? Dopamine makes you feel good. If you really want to simplify people's motivations, it's really the difference between dopamine and cortisol. Okay, it sounds very shallow. But in my experience, when people are making bad choices, okay, when men choose to be unfaithful to their families, when women choose too much time in their career, when children are choosing to do drugs, when men are doing internet pornography, it's pandemic right now amongst men and amongst pastors. Over 80% of pastors struggle with internet porn. I ask myself, what's the fundamental struggle? It's dopamine, right? People just want to feel good. Okay, now don't go to your teacher's students and say, man, I'm not going to get a good grade because I don't need the dopamine. Your teacher will say, you're a dope. Okay. But in the sum things, people strive to feel good. Now, there are a few things. I have a few answers. I think people want to feel significant. They want to be worthy of attention. They want to be important. This is why it's very important that I spend time with my son. If I don't, he's going to start feeling unimportant. Okay, my son, believe it or not, he's only six. How many of you have met my son Cole? His name's Coleman. We call him Cole. Any of you? Okay. Just a few of you. Guys got to meet him. He's hilarious. And he's playing chess now. He's only six. The problem is he always wants me to play chess. And while it gives him dopamine, it gives me cortisol sometimes. And sometimes I try to checkmate him fast. I don't even know how to play chess that well. Sometimes I try to checkmate him fast so I don't have to play any longer. Don't tell him that. He's only six. But I realize that if I don't give my children attention, they will not feel significant. Okay, the best thing I can do for my daughter now, I have a little daughter, cuter than a button, and I worry someday she's going to do what I've seen so many women do, give their heart to not a dopamine, but a dope. Okay, that makes sense? You guys know what dope, okay? I'm worried about that because the number one thing I've seen amongst the women that we've worked with at church and all the years in the ministry, the number one thing I've seen women do is they give their heart away to someone they shouldn't. And so, of course, I pray. But I know the best thing I can do, other than pray for my daughter, is to love her and spend time with her. Now, you've married off your kids, right, David? Don't you have a daughter? Oh, you don't have a daughter. Oh, okay. Okay, well, never mind. Okay, well, Rachel's not married yet, so. But the number one thing I can do for my daughter, okay, and this is good, Rachel, you can use this to bribe your dad for whatever restaurant you'll go to tonight, right? But the best thing I can do for my daughter is for her to love me. I know that. You can only play so much Candyland before your cortisol level goes to the roof, though. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, pray for me. But I'm ready to kill myself playing Candyland. I got to find new ways to spend time with my daughter that doesn't drive me crazy. But the point is that I know human beings strive for significance. That's one way they try to feel good about themselves. Okay, how many of you have seen this movie or read this book? Okay, you saw the movie? Okay, who's all saw the movie before? How many of you have read the book? Okay, how many of you have read the book and seen the movie? Okay, how many of you thought the book was better? Oh, really? Most people say, oh, I hate the movie, the book was so good, okay? So, who can tell me who these two people are? Who? What's? Hazel Grace, yes, and who else? Augustus, okay? Now, do you guys remember the scene where Augustus is about ready to die, and they're sitting in the park, and he's all upset that no one's going to really know him? Because remember, Augustus had this feeling that if he wasn't known and loved by millions of people, his life was insignificant. Do you remember that scene? And then Hazel Grace, remember what she says to him? She says, I will remember you. Okay, no matter what happens, I will remember you. She was basically saying that, you know, because, you know, Augustus is about ready to die. He knows that people really don't know him. Now, contrast with the author. What was the author's name? What? No, not the actual author, but there's a guy who wrote a book that they both read. I'm sorry. They're contrasting him in the movie. Remember that? What that guy's name was? Yeah, well, say it really loud to Rachel. Peter what? I think it was Van Houten, wasn't it? Something like that. Here was a man who wrote a book that was adored by millions, and yet when they walked in to see him, all this fan mail was on the ground. He didn't even care about it because what had happened was his daughter had died. And when his daughter has died, he died. He became this angry, bitter man. In fact, I I saw this silly movie called The Huntsman. It was a sequel to the same, basically the same movie. And basically, this woman became evil because she lost her son, her child. It's a silly movie. It was one of those free weekend things that I didn't pay a cent for it. But the point is that there's this theme that when you lose love, part of you dies. And so in the scene, Augustus doesn't think he's very significant because no one knows him. Yet there was this famous author named Peter Van Dyke. We don't know his actual name, but he was known by millions, and yet he was in a much worse shape because he had no one that really loved him. He loved no one. Well, these two had each other. It's a good movie, a better book, though I haven't read the book. Everyone just tells me it's a good book. But people want significance. Another thing, as a predominantly Asian culture, is we know we want status. Okay, when I was young, my mom was very much focused on me having mianzi face. She wanted me to succeed in everything, in academics, in piano, right? Did everyone take piano lessons? Okay. It's just the way it is, right? Being Asian, growing up, you just have to take piano lessons. That's what we do as a community. Just accept it. All right? I did too. But she wanted me to have this standing with people because she herself knew that it was a greater face for her if I did well than if she did well. And I began to realize that it was a cycle that made me feel very unimportant as I grew up, because there was always someone that was smarter than me, always someone that was better than me, and my mom kind of made me know that they were out there, if that makes any sense. You guys know what I'm saying? There's always that person that you have to be, and if you're that person, you're quote-unquote worthy. I was definitely not that person. And my mom made it very clear that I wasn't. And growing up, it made me feel really, I had a terrible self-esteem because I always felt that I didn't measure up. People want status. And then they want security. People don't want to feel threatened. We don't want to be in danger. Okay, if you see what happened in this last election, you know that, it's not a criticism. Donald Trump used fear. A lot of people were afraid. I know some of you may be offended because I know you probably voted for him. This is not a political statement, but people didn't feel safe. And when you talk about building a wall and deporting these people who are criminals, okay, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's a good thing if we can get bad people out of our country. But when you make people feel scared, they're going to naturally react. All right, fear. And so security is we feel we're not in danger. So people want a lot of different things. Okay, I come to realize that as I study India, they have what's called a caste system. You're kind of told where you're already at. And the lowest caste system is the Dalits. That's the lowest caste system. So if you're born into that caste system, you're already told that you're the lowest. At least they don't mess around. If you happen to have leprosy, you're even worse. See, India, they've already set up this system where you're high or low. As I've pondered this question, what is true happiness? Okay, I've seen people who have everything you want. Okay, Tom Brady. Okay, you guys all know who Tom Brady is? Okay, who's never heard of Tom Brady? Anyone never heard of Tom Brady? Okay, the last Super Bowl was played in Houston. All right. And the New England Patriots won that Super Bowl. It was probably one of the most amazing games I've ever seen in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady won it. All right. Now, I was actually at the University of Michigan working when Tom Brady was a quarterback there. If you had told me Tom Brady would be this great quarterback, I would say no way. In fact, when he was there, he wasn't even the best quarterback on that team. They had a guy named Drew Henson that they recruited that was way better than him. In fact, I was at a game where Tom Brady did so bad that the crowd booed him so bad that they had to take him out. And they put in Drew Henson in. Now this true freshman comes in and he got clobbered, poor guy. But that's how bad Tom Brady was in college. Now he actually had a decent career. But Tom Brady built his career up. How many of you have seen that 60 Minutes interview with Tom Brady years and years ago before he met Gisele Bundchen? Okay, this is when he was married to his first wife. Did anyone see that 60 Minutes interview? You did? Okay, anyone else see it other than Rachel? Okay, it was a long time ago. He did this 60 Minutes interview, and they were basically saying, what more do you need? You've won the Super Bowl 3 times. You've got more money than you can ever spend. You've got a wife who's a Hollywood actress that he eventually divorced. Now he's married to, Gisele Bündchen, who's the most famous person in Brazil. And Tom Brady made this statement that I'll never forget. He said, is this all there is? Okay, he had everything that we wanted. He had a beautiful spouse, he had fame, he had fortune. There was really nothing else the world could give Tom Brady. And that's what he had to say. He says, is there anything else? And that's why I've spent so much time on this introduction. Because as you read the Bible, you begin to see that what people struggle with today is no different than what they struggle with back in the Bible. We're still trying to seek after God. Now, Philippians 3 is really Paul's statement. He's basically saying, you know, at one time, I had everything you want. I had fame. I had fortune. We don't know if he was married or not. He may have been. He certainly wasn't married when he was writing the scripture. Certainly he had fame and certainly he had fortune because he was bragging about what a great Pharisee he was. And yet he said, I count it as rubbish, okay? The Chinese translation, I believe, is fun too. You guys know what that means? Fun too. All right. Who's been taking Chinese? Anyone? Okay, Rachel, you said you're a minor in Chinese. I'm going to help you out here. You don't know what fun too means? Okay, Mom, you want to help her out? No? Okay. Basically, if you've ever changed a poopy diaper, that's what fun too is. All right. If you don't want to, my daughter's potty trained. I should come a while back. If there's any babies here, go to the nursery and say, when the next time there's a poopy diaper, let me change it for the purpose of spiritual spirituality. And look at that dirty diaper and you say, this is what Paul said, all this thing before me was like. To him, he considered it all rubbish. He considered it really, he couldn't use a stronger word to describe how much that didn't mean to him. And so change a poopy diaper and just realize that everything Paul had, he considered rubbish compared to knowing Christ, because he had everything and it just did not fill him. Stuck. Technical difficulties. Anyway, you guys know what's wrong? Stuck. Did it freeze? I should always check. No problem. That's why we come to Nicodemus. Okay, Nicodemus is a man that we can really see is the exact kind of person we want to be. Okay, how many of you want to be a lawyer someday? I'm talking to the students here. Any of you ever have aspirations of being a lawyer? Any of you? Just one? Okay, and what's your name again? Jason, what's the ultimate in law? What's the what? A judge? And judge in what? Supreme Court, right? That's the ultimate. Okay? The ultimate is the Supreme Court. Well, Nicodemus was a member of the Sanhedrin, which would be the equivalent to the Jewish Supreme Court. He was powerful. He had power. Nicodemus had fame. He had fortune. In fact, one of the reasons why Jesus was so threatening to the Jewish people, especially the Jewish leaders, was that they had this empire. And as Jesus was growing in his ministry, people began to follow Jesus and leaving them. And they, of all people, should have known that Jesus was the Messiah. But instead of bowing down in worship, they were threatened. And so most of the Gospels depicts the Pharisees and the Sadducees in a very negative light. But here in John, you see that here is a Pharisee who is one of the most powerful men in Judaism. And yet, he knows something is missing. He sees Jesus, he knows there's some signs, and he himself is saying, you know, my colleagues don't agree with me. They've been trying to kill him for over 3 years. But maybe this guy could be the Messiah. Thank you, George. And so in chapter 3, Nicodemus approaches. It's okay, we don't need it. I'm ready. Oh, there we go. Whoops. All right, one more thing. How many super lottery winners go bankrupt after they win the super lottery? Okay, in Indiana, there was just a jackpot for over $430 million. How many winners of big lottery winners go bankrupt after they win? Do you know? Anyone would guess? What, 80%? Any other guesses? Not 100%. Close, 70%. If you want to study a contrast in suffering people, study people after they've won the super lottery. Okay, most of them, it's not uncommon that people die because they're murdered. It's not uncommon that they have horrible family relationships because now everyone wants their money. If you win the super lottery, don't tell a soul. All right? And donate it all. Because it is a curse. All right? So anyway, at our church this year, we've had this Transforming Generations. In the end, it's a campaign that wants us to go deeper with Jesus. Because in the end, if you study the scriptures, the only true way to really feel the significance, the status, the security that we all desire is to have Jesus priority. And I think that's why we've had the Transforming Generation. So we're looking at Nicodemus. In chapter 3, you see that Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night. He's a seeker right at this time. He kind of knows, he's seen Jesus, he knows that something is up. And so at nighttime, he comes to talk to Jesus. Now, most people think that he came at night not to be seen, which is possible. I'll ask him when I get to heaven. He's there. Most likely, he's busy during the day. And there's not much going on, as much going on at night because they don't have electricity like we do. And so everything has to be done in the day because when the darkness comes, you're just limited. Okay? How many of you have ever had a meeting here when the power's out? You should. Just get the candles. But you see, back then, all they had was candles. They didn't have much going on at night because they didn't have the street lights like we have. How many of you have been in pure darkness? You know it's not a good thing. And they didn't have flashlights, they had torches. Well, it's not that convenient to light a torch. And so most likely Nicodemus is coming at night because that's just when they have time to talk. There is a security and covering. And Nicodemus is seeking Jesus, and he is clearly seeking salvation because Jesus uses the term born again quite a bit in chapter 3. In fact, what's the most famous verse in the Bible? Do you want to know? John 3:16. Okay, what is John 3:16? That he gave his only begotten son, right? That whoever believes in him. Right, John 3:16, it's in the context of this conversation with Nicodemus. Okay, now, if you look at the woman at the well, Nicodemus is the highest in society. He's probably the most powerful. He's a member of the Sanhedrin. This woman is the lowest in society. Not only is she a woman, she's a Samaritan. And not only is she a Samaritan, she's living with a person who's not her spouse. And she's had 5 husbands before. Jewish culture, maybe 2 divorces were sort of acceptable, but 5 would make her low. She's the lowest of the low. And so Jesus, in chapter 3, talks to Nicodemus, probably the highest of the high. He's in the Sanhedrin. This is the lowest of the low. Jesus is telling us that the gospel is for all. And so Nicodemus has everything, and yet is still searching for something. And comes to Jesus and says, hey, you know, I think you might be the Messiah. I'm paraphrasing. And Jesus says, you know what? I'm the Son of God, and you must be born again. Jesus kind of goes right to the point. He's not a chit-chatter. Okay, Jesus doesn't waste time. He just kind of says, you know, you gotta accept me. And so Nicodemus, at that point, clearly is a seeker. Now, that's the first stage. Nicodemus comes up again in chapter 7. In chapter 7, Jesus is preaching at the temple. The temple guards come and they say, hey, Jesus is preaching at the temple. And all of Nicodemus' colleagues are saying, why didn't you arrest him? Okay, they are so threatened by Jesus that they want him out. Okay, when I taught at Houston Baptist University, I always asked the question, was there ever anyone that spread lies about you? And invariably, almost every girl would raise their hand. And invariably, it was always about a guy. It was about one guy that they both liked, and they knew it. You know what I'm saying? There's one guy, and these two or three girls liked him, and so one girl, feeling threatened, she would spread bad rumors. And if I told you some of the rumors that got spread, it's like a gossip column. Well, I see that behavior going on in Nicodemus's colleagues. They're threatened by Jesus, and so naturally when people feel threatened, the first thing they want to do is to eliminate that threat. Okay, people don't like to look inside. They don't like to look at how bad they are on the inside. It's easier to transfer onto someone else and say they're bad. Much easier than saying I'm bad and I need to change. Okay, they'd rather say you're bad and you stink. Okay? That's why the easiest way to feel good about yourself is to talk bad about someone else. Okay, that's why Asians struggle with gossip so bad. Why do we struggle with gossip? It's because we feel bad about ourselves. And so it's easy for us to talk bad about someone else. Okay, actually, every culture has gossip, not just Asian culture. All right? Right, Mike? Caucasians gossip too, right? All right. So it's a human thing, not just a Chinese thing. I always cut on the Chinese, and I realized, you know what? What we struggle with is just the same that everyone else struggles with. So Nicodemus, on the other hand, stands up for Jesus and says, look, you know, we can't arrest him. That's basically what Nicodemus is saying. And his colleagues attack him. You see, Joseph of Arimathea is described as a secret disciple. I also believe that it's true of Nicodemus. They're both disciples of Christ, but they're not yet ready to say it. Now, you can't remain a secret disciple forever. There's a point in time where you need to make that jump from secret disciple to servant. And I believe that's what happens in this passage we just read. Okay. I went so much on our introduction. I was having such a good time talking about how unsatisfied we are. I thought I had the key that I forgot to tell you how to be satisfied. Oh well, I can go fast. Jesus has been crucified. Now, it's the Passover feast. One of the heightened times, probably one of the most important times in Jewish culture is the Passover feast. Now, Nicodemus is a Pharisee. He's on the Sanhedrin. He is up there. He is powerful. One thing in Jewish law that you cannot do is touch a dead body. Okay, if you look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, remember the priest and the Levite both passed the man on that was hurt. Finally, the Samaritan saw that person, helped him. Well, the reason why the priest and the Levite didn't help is they thought the guy was dead. And so, touching a dead body will render you unclean for about a month. So if Nicodemus touches Jesus' dead body, he can't celebrate Passover for a month. It's actually written in the law. In the law, it's written there. And yet, Nicodemus and both Joseph of Arimathea, during the heightened time of Passover, they take Jesus' body, they touch it, and they bring about 75 pounds of perfumes, spices, and myrrh. Actually, it could be up to 100 pounds. We don't know the exact measurements. Between 75 and 100 pounds. Now, how many? Any of you guys weigh 100 pounds? Some of you guys are sticks. All right. Any of you guys weigh 100 pounds? How much? No, close. You just imagine. Okay, I'm sure you guys weigh more than 75 pounds. One of you. Just imagine you guys turned into perfume. That's the amount that Nicodemus brought to prepare the body. You bring that much because of royalty. That's not typical. It's typical of a king. It's typical of royalty, but it's not typical just because you just can't afford it. It's just too much money. But here, Nicodemus brings an amount of perfume worthy of a king, touches the body, knowing that he will be unclean. But he says, you know what? It's time. No more secret disciple. It's time that I say, like Paul did. Now, of course, Paul was still persecuting people. Well, he hadn't started persecuting people yet. He'll start right after Jesus' resurrection. But here Nicodemus already states, he's almost preparing the way for Paul, saying, you know what? I have everything you can accomplish. Okay, just imagine if I think the guy that's being nominated is it Gorsuch? Is that his name? Just imagine if Gorsuch one day just said, you know what, forget this. I'm not going to go on the Supreme Court. Or if a current Supreme Court member, like Justice John Roberts, how about that? Okay, he's probably about 15 years away from considering retiring. Probably 20, actually. Those guys go forever, don't they? I don't know how they do it. Let's say John Roberts wakes up one day and says, I don't want to be a Supreme Court justice anymore. I don't even want to be chief. Not only do I not want to be chief justice, I don't want to be a justice anymore. And turns his back and goes backpacking, you know, or something. Well, that's what Nicodemus is doing. He's basically saying, look, I've got everything I can achieve. And you know what? I'm willing to give it up for Jesus Christ. Because he discovered that Jesus Christ was the true Messiah. And he gave it up. Now, I'm not saying you quit school, you quit your jobs, and you become a missionary or pastor. That's not all what I'm saying. But it was Nicodemus' heart that changed. Because he began to say, look, at great risk, I have to consider, at great risk, following Jesus Christ could cost me dearly, and I'm willing to pay the cost. It doesn't mean that you tell off your teachers when they're teaching about things against the Bible. And of course, this is Texas, so a little bit more conservative than you would be in California, maybe. But this is Woodlands. Woodlands is probably more liberal than where I'm at. Is that right? Woodlands more liberal here? Not that that's a bad thing. You know, but not to say liberalism is bad, but I'm saying that certain things, certain people see things differently. And if they teach that the Bible isn't true, well, that we know is wrong, because we believe the Bible is true. And a lot of teachers, they'll teach that the Bible is not true. My son's, you know, school, they won't teach, you know, certain things, but they will teach other things. And it's okay. When my son comes back, I'll just teach him this is what the Bible says. Okay? It's not my son, not my school's job to teach my son and my daughter truth. It's my job. All right? And they're not going to be perfect. I better not depend too much on my teachers. I better make sure I'm talking to my children and saying, what are you learning? Better make sure I'm talking to my teachers and ask them what they're teaching. All right? But in the end, I know that to follow God is more important than to follow the world. And that it means enough that I'm willing, you know, to give up all for God. And if you want to keep studying the famous people, almost every famous person, very, very few of them end up having lives that we want. Most of them have had multiple spouses. Most of them have drug addictions. A lot of them die young because of their drug addiction has ravaged their hearts. Okay, tonight's the Academy Awards. Okay. I know Rachel and Nancy are going to watch it. If you don't watch it, tape it and come to the part where they always remember the people who die. And pay particular attention to those actors, the actors, the ones that you know. Okay, the behind the scenes, those makeup artists, they live till they're 150. All right. Those producers, some of those guys, they live till they looked already dead in their photos. But pay attention specifically to those people that you know. And every year, there's always people that are quite young that die. Because you see, if you spend enough time with the quote-unquote stars, and I'm not just talking about movie stars, okay? Stars can be, you know, famous preachers, okay? When Elder George said that I'm a renowned speaker, well, that's not true. But let's say someday, I mean, I've met renowned speakers, quote unquote, in the Christian circles, and not all of them impress me. In fact, most of them don't, actually. Okay, as my position as a professor of theological studies, I do get to meet and rub shoulders with some of these people, and not all of them are very impressive. In fact, it's not uncommon that later I find out that they've fallen away. Okay? Just pay attention to these people that you want to be so much alike, and you'll find that you don't want to be like them at all. Because the Bible says a life lived of God will lead to destruction. And you will see that lived out. Christian and non-Christian who don't put God as the priority. Let me close with this man, Dr. Paul Brand. Dr. Paul Brand is the epitome of someone that lived the life for Jesus. Okay, he was a surgeon. He was the one that discovered that leprosy, the disease, was a disease that attacked pain cells. That's why people, when they have leprosy, they lose their hands, their fingers. It's not that the disease attacks it; it's that they can't feel pain. So if you're hammering a nail and you hit your thumb, you're going to get hurt. But a leprosy patient will hit their thumb and won't feel a thing. Right? Leprosy people often are blind, not because the disease attacks their eyes, but their body doesn't tell their eyes to blink. And eventually, if your eyes don't blink, you dry up. That's what he found out. He was a brilliant surgeon. He was offered all the top posts in all the top universities in England and in America. Turned them all down, and he lived his life amongst the Dalits of India. In fact, it was not even the Dalits, it was called the untouchable caste, lower. Because leprosy patients, no one wanted to be around them. They're often in the desert, and that's where he spent his main years growing up, or on his productive years, rather than being at the top medical schools that all asked him to be part of. He chose to give his life to the leprosy patients of India. And because of that, he made all kinds of discoveries that even today, people who have this disease are being treated because of his willingness to sacrifice. Every man who met Paul Brand knows one thing. This was a man who was full. Even though he didn't have the positions, he certainly didn't have the wealth, even though he could have easily amassed great wealth as a surgeon. He could have had great fame. Everyone who met Paul Brand knows that this man was full of life because he had given himself to a cause. He'd said no to the things of the world that tempted him. And he said, look, Lord, these people need me. I will go and serve them. You begin to see that fullness doesn't come in advancing. Fullness comes in descending. That we stop trying to advance ourselves and begin to try to pull up those who are hurting. The world becomes a better place when someone who is deeply hurting is pulled up. That's why we need to spread the gospel, because we have the life-giving message of Jesus Christ. If people don't have the life-giving message of Jesus Christ, they're separated for eternity. But on a different level, it's more than just using words. It's using our life. And to give your life to someone, to the poor, to the underprivileged. Okay, I asked myself the other day, what one issue, if I had only one issue to champion, would I do? What cause would I pick up? And for me, it's orphans, because both my kids, they're adopted. And I saw firsthand an orphanage, and I just knew this is not what God's best. So for me, you know, adoption, orphans, seeing less orphans in the world is something I want to see. The point is that true happiness doesn't come from finding the most beautiful woman. I mean, most of you agree, Jody's much better looking than I am. I accept it. It's okay. All right? Hey, David, don't be laughing, man. You're in the same boat as I am. All right? I know Feng Mei, I know who got the better deal of that bargain, okay? But he gets to eat her tofu pea all the time. All right? It doesn't come from fortune. Okay, I don't have much money, but there have been times I've had more money than others. It doesn't come from status at all. Okay, I just finished a book. And you know, it's quite depressing. Because you know what that means? It means I have to start another book. And if you've ever written a book, okay, you know, for most of us, I mean, I think Michael doesn't mind, but for me, it's hard, in my opinion. Okay, not all people. Okay, some people love it. I know, Michael, you love doing that stuff, so I'm not going to speak for you. For me, it was hard. And I was very happy when it was done. I was really happy when it was published. And then I said, oh, I got to start another one. Not too happy. But it doesn't come from happiness. It comes when Jesus Christ is at the center. It comes when, like with Nicodemus, when we were able to put Jesus at the center. Let's pray. Lord, we're all in different ways. Some of us are seekers. We still haven't given our life to Jesus. Some of us are secret disciples. We may have put our faith in you, but we're just still not ready to take that step. We're still growing. But Lord, you want us all to be your servants. Where we see the that it's your life that means more than ours, that you have increased in our life and we have decreased. And I pray that we will all discover what Nicodemus discovered, what Paul discovered, what Dr. Paul Brand discovered. We all just see that though it's not wrong to have status, it's not wrong to have wealth, it's wrong if we seek after these things to fill our hearts. And I pray whatever blessing you give us, we will give it back to you. It's really what all people like Nicodemus, Paul, and Dr. Paul Brand have done, is they've just taken what you've given them and given back. And we've all been given something by you, Lord. I pray whatever you give us, we'll give back to you in worship. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.